in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome back to another edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. I am your host, the publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum. And joining me today, a little bit later, will be North Dakota State football analyst and multiple-time national champion Trevor Gebhardt. Right now, we are going to talk about one of the bigger weekends that I can remember in Bison Hoops history, just because of this really unique scheduling situation. There's not oftentimes that you've got a back-to-back, certainly not in the same city, but the Bison are in a position to win their second consecutive regular season championship, Summit League championship, if they win both games. And that's a lot to ask. It's two road games against the number one team right now in the conference, having just split twice at home against the other two top teams in the conference. But all hope is not lost, and to kind of guide us through that is two-time North Dakota State men's basketball captain and our hoops analyst, Nate Zastrow. Nate, how are we doing, man?
We're doing good. Looking forward to a fun weekend of sports. Obviously, the Bison have a great opportunity in Vermilion, and hopefully they can get a couple wins. That'd be fun to get a conference championship. Obviously, that's your goal at the start of the regular season. Once you get to conference season, is get that regular season title and then work on getting to the NCAA tournament. So it all starts with your regular season, and they have a great opportunity this weekend.
Yeah, we're not going to relitigate the South Dakota State series. We did a podcast. Sam and I did a podcast previewing that series. Nate and I did a podcast Saturday morning, and we got back together after the win on Saturday. So we've been South Dakota stated out. Nate, I do, though, want to just kind of talk in general about this season because it is coming to a close. And just kind of where you thought they might be heading into the year, where you thought they might be after the Donald Carter injury news, and then even where you thought they might be after, like, the Nebraska and the Nevada game. Because I feel like watching this team play earlier in the year and just flat out losing that much of your scoring, because, you know, Jared Samuelson may not have been the best player on the team, but he still hit big shots for that team. And then you have, you know, two basically co-conference player of the year level guys in Tyson Ward and Vinny Shahid. What were your expectations kind of at those points in the offseason and obviously early in this season?
Yeah, I think at the start of the year, obviously losing that much scoring, you're going to take some lumps. You're going to be playing some younger guys, and we knew that kids like Skunberg were going to play. Nelson was going to play. We didn't know what we were going to get from him. And as I know as a player, and most people can see even as a fan, is freshmen are going to have their ups and downs throughout the year, and those two have definitely had that. McKinney, we didn't know if he was going to play. I think the Carter injury kind of threw him into the wolves a little bit, into the rotation, and he's been kind of up and down as well. After the Donald Carter injury, it was kind of a mystery as to what they were going to do. Obviously, we knew Sam was going to be the point guard. We didn't know how well that was going to go. I think that's gone better than expected. It was little poor to start, and they played some really good teams. So it's kind of tough to throw a brand new point guard and, hey, go play Nevada, go play Creighton, go play Nebraska, go play Kansas. So I think we've seen the good part of Sam here in the Summit League season. When it came down to the conference season, we knew that the start of the season was going to pay dividends for the conference season. They weren't going to play any competition in the Summit League besides maybe a South Dakota State from a talent perspective. And I don't think they're even to the level of NDSU's non-conference schedule. So with the culture that Richmond has developed there, I expected them in the conference season to probably be in that 3-4 range. I think that they've established themselves to be able to win home games with what they have and maybe split a couple on the road. I didn't expect them to have a chance to play for the conference championship this weekend. So I think that they've exceeded expectations from the start of the year. But when you're looking at it now and now you got that chance, you don't want to let that opportunity go by.
Yeah, and it's interesting to look too at the bracketology and things of that nature. I can't remember what the situation was, but at one point, North Dakota State was in, I think, honestly, Lenardi's bracketology, the OG over at ESPN.com. And, you know, I think it was odd because they were a 16 seed. And you think about this team and the way that they played against Kansas and the way that they played against TCU, it just their quality up and down the roster in comparisons to other, you know, groups, whether it been other teams that got a 15 or 16 or what have you. And then you go back and you realize that as good as this team is, as much as they are, you know, potentially going to be a tournament team and could win the league and could potentially be 11-5 or 12-4 in that league, they're still only 12-10 overall right now because of the 0-5 start. And I believe ultimately ended up 2-6. It's been a tough road to make the overall product, the overall resume look good because it was kind of a rough beginning there. And it's hard to fault them. I think trial by fire a little bit, but also they just wanted to get games and that's what they did. I mean, they just wanted to be able to play other teams as kind of helter-skelter as everything was in the late fall.
Yeah, and you want, as a mid-major and as a fan, you want to see your team play the big dogs. So I think it was a good opportunity. And Richmond, kind of like you said, he was trying to get games in. And in the long run, I think it's going to pay huge dividends, especially for those young guys like Nelson McKinney, Skunberg, I'm trying to think, Malik Harden-Hayes, just to keep getting those big-time opponents so that they can get their feet wet. So the lights aren't too big for them once they get to that stage, if they make the NCAA tournament. As far as the NCAA tournament goes, if you're a 1 or 2 seed, I'll tell you one thing. I wouldn't want to play a Max Amos who can go off for 30 or a South Dakota who – I mean, they had a tough non-conference schedule. They lost to ranked Drake by, I think, 15, got smoked by Colorado, and then almost they played Nebraska to 7. Then you got NDSU, who almost gave TCU a run, gave Kansas a run, South Dakota State gave West Virginia a run, beat Iowa State. I mean, no 1 or 2 seed is going to want to play a team from the Summit League. And obviously, in a strange year, teams kind of, without a crowd or a limited crowd, teams kind of show – how good they really are because there isn't a crowd. Like the talent's most likely just going to take over. So I think the Summit League proved well, especially the top half and the non-conference season, that whoever makes it is most likely going to compete in that NCAA tournament.
Yeah, there's no way, you know, if I'm a top seed that I want anything to do with whoever comes out of the Summit League, you know, you talk about a Douglas Wilson and that Iowa State, or excuse me, South Dakota State team that can just get hot and, you know, easily can fill it up. Shireman can fill it up. They can, Arians can, you know, get shots up. They get hot from three, they become a problem. You know, North Dakota State being Virginia Light, packing it in, length, bothering shots. You get cold against NDSU. You know, you could get beat 54-51 in an NCAA tournament game if things aren't going your way. And as you mentioned, Asmus and Banner might just give you 60 between the two of them. I'm with you, though. Just not a group that – or not a league that a 1 or a 2 seed should have to mess with. But this odd year, I think, really threw into question some of these out of conference schedules, and unfortunately for the Summit League, put a lot of losses on their schedule before they got going. I mean, North Dakota State had some fun stuff against the Valley, fun stuff against the Big Sky, opportunities to win games that mattered on a mid-major scale, but maybe didn't quite matter, you know, on the scale of you know, seeding or BPI or making yourself look super great. You're right, though. This is going to be a tough deal. Let's talk about this upcoming weekend, though, in Verm. Again, I would guess that frankly, South Dakota will be narrowly favored in both games. You know, I would guess like a 2 or 3 point spread from a Vegas perspective. But, you know, I think North Dakota State has a chance, and we saw that a little bit in the way that they kind of scored at will and ended up winning 74-67 against these guys in the Dakota Showcase. With that said, that game was a long time ago, folks. And I think as Richmond mentioned, and as those guys have mentioned, these are like, they'll look at the game, they'll watch the tape. But I think a lot of that game too can kind of go in the trash. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, it was pretty early in the year. Obviously, it's good to play a team. You're still going to kind of know the personnel, know their tendencies. Probably got a couple new sets. But for the most part, I mean, yeah, teams are going to get better chemistry and play better throughout the year. Obviously, South Dakota's kind of taken off since playing in that, leading the conference. But it's an interesting weekend. I mean, you got two guys on South Dakota who are averaging 39 of their 75 points a game. They shoot over half their shots from the floor, over half their threes, and two-thirds of their free throws. NDSU has two really good defenders for those two guys, and I think they match up really, really well in that aspect. I think from a talent perspective, these teams are close to the same. I would almost even give the edge to NDSU overall. I mean, those are the only two guys that are scoring in double figures, and you throw Edie and Griesel on them, and they've shown that they can take away players in different games, whether it be Oral Roberts, South Dakota State. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting matchup. And NDSU ultimately, like we've talked about all year, is going to have to hit open shots. And if they can do that, I think that they can have some success this weekend.
Yeah, the South Dakota-South Dakota State matchup is really fascinating to me because – if I'm a Bison fan, I definitely would prefer to play South Dakota, but yet South Dakota won the season series if you count the game in the Dakota Showcase. And I don't know if it's just that South Dakota State doesn't match up great with a team that's got two studs. I think SDSU, did they split with Oral Roberts, Nate?
South Dakota only played one game against Oral Roberts.
No. The Jacks. How did the Jacks do against
split? They lost the one on Friday and came back and won on Saturday.
Yeah, so that two-headed monster thing seems to be kind of a recipe to beat South Dakota State, which is something that these guys have been able to do twice. But as you've mentioned, it's a tough matchup for USD because of the ability of Edie and Griesel to really give people issues, and there is a chasm, and it's kind of an Oral Roberts type chasm, but Plitzewite is just not the same level of player that Azimus is, and very few are. Look, Plitzewite's great. NDSU recruited him two different times, tried to get him to be a part of the program, but he is not going to just pull up from 28 in your face like Azimus has the ability to do. And you put Griesel on Plitzewite and put Edie on Amude or flip that, and you can kind of hide Jarius Cook on defense because, you know, the other guys that are getting a ton of minutes, like, you know, Perot Hunt is averaging 26 minutes a game but only 6 points, and Comateros is averaging 19 minutes a game and only 7 points. They've got multiple guys, Archambault, 17 minutes a game, 5 points. Chisholm, 16 minutes a game, 4 points. Like, they've got a ton of guys that are getting minutes that are just not scaring you. Will they get an offensive rebound and knock it back in? Yes. Can they maybe hit a wide open corner three? Yeah, they can. But so much of the drink is stirred by the Plitzewite and Amude combo. Plitzewite really has just been shooting the hell out of the ball, 45% from the field, over 41% from three, and just about 89% from the line. He is a very, very gifted offensive player, but not a shutdown defender. And that's, I think, where USD really struggled against NDSU was the ability to, you know, get in front of Rocky, get NDSU guarded, because they come at you from so many different ways, the Bison do, without that go-to scorer, without that go-to guy. I mean, they were incredibly balanced in that game. Tyree had 17, Sam had 16, Rocky had 16, Malik had 11, and Jarius had 7, because it kind of didn't matter what USD did. They were able to find a good shot, even sometimes late in the clock. They just don't have that rim protection or really, you know, a wing stopper like North Dakota State does. And I think that's kind of where hope lies if you're a Bison fan.
Yeah, and the balance, I think, is going to be really key this weekend. USD just, I mean, NDSU's had some success against them. They really have. And I think a lot of it has to do with how they've defended them. And USD hasn't never been a very great defensive team. They've kind of been in the middle of the pack. And guys like Amude hasn't had great games against NDSU. I'm going back to last year here, and first game against NDSU, 9 for 20, not a bad game. 3 for 11 in the next game, and he was 5 for 14 in the first game. So I think NDSU's done a good job on him defensively. I think them defensively is going to carry them this weekend. I think their balance is going to be good. That they have more depth than USD. I know USD last year, their depth is ultimately what killed them in the Summit tournament. They got a little bit more depth. Like you said, they got a lot of guys playing different minutes and different games, but the production just hasn't been there. I mean, they've literally been a two-man show. When two guys are scoring over half your points, you're relying on them night in and night out. So if NDSU can somewhat limit both of them, or even one of them, like they did Amude in the first matchup, I think they can come away with a weekend sweep. But obviously, easier said than done right now. So we'll see what happens this weekend. And I know NDSU will be ready to go. Hopefully both teams are, and we get to see some good basketball.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you know, you mentioned that 0-5 start, because these guys have not, they got 0-3 against UND, which is wild to me. But they did. They lost to Colorado, Drake, and Nebraska, and then lost their first two games of the South Dakota Showcase. One thing that I think could be very much different, and you mentioned, was North Dakota State's depth with Des McKinney, Jackson Notek, and Grant Nelson and Bowden Skunberg combining for six total points in not very many minutes in that first game in Sioux Falls. They just were not excellent depth wise. Grant Nelson, I think, really showed how far he's come this last week against South Dakota State, and it still remains a major, major advantage for NDSU. Nate, if you don't mind, can you give us the scenarios that you understand right now for seeding?
So if all games are played, if NDSU sweeps their conference champs, they'll have a better win percentage than South Dakota State, even if they sweep. If they split and South Dakota State were to sweep, I had this down. Just give me 1 second. If USD splits and South Dakota State wins both, South Dakota State will be the one seed. They'll have a 750 win percentage, and South Dakota will be right behind at 11-4, and NDSU will be third seed at 10-5. Oral Roberts had a chance if they would have won on Sunday, but that is out the window now. So they could possibly get up to the three seed. I don't think they can.
So yeah, you're telling me that NDSU, SDSU, and USD are going to be 1, 2, and 3.
Could be if they swept and NDSU got swept.
Okay. Okay.
So
is there a path to the number 2 seed for North Dakota State?
The 2 seed would happen if they split this weekend and South Dakota State split with UMKC. And that would put USD at the 1, NDSU 2, South Dakota State 3, and Oral Roberts at the 4. So that would be a semifinal matchup with South Dakota State, potentially. Based on the past years, we don't know.
All right. Thanks, Nate. We will go to a quick break here, and then we'll get Trevor on the line to break down this weekend's game at Southern Illinois. And like we said, bringing on the man, the myth, the legend, Trevor Gebhardt. Trev, you tried to get a hold of me for a little pre-production meeting. Somebody else picked up the phone.
Yeah, that was first in Bison Report history. Little baby B decided to answer the phone, and Ross had no idea that I gave him a call. And then I get a text saying, hey, was that a butt dial or did my daughter answer the phone? And I said, yeah, your daughter definitely answered the phone. So we didn't have a very productive conversation, but I enjoyed that company more than yourself. No offense.
Yeah, that was polite of you to stay on the phone for, I think it was like 48 seconds. I looked down. I'm like, how in the world is Trevor still on the line? And then I realized that Berkeley was actually babbling at you for, you know, about 48 seconds. So that
it was awesome. Well, I mean, we got to give it some context. I had an employee that had some car trouble, so giving you a buzz to make sure that we got this scheduled right. And so kind of important. And then
absolutely.
I got to talk to your child, so that was fun.
she was happy to hear from you. Anyway, moving on. We're not going to relitigate, I don't think, a ton of the Youngstown State game because we did have a post-game discussion about that game already, hit the books early on in the week. And so we're going to kind of look forward a little bit here to Southern Illinois as we just got done talking about the big weekend in hoops, a big weekend for football too. I mean, this is a team that has not gone on the road yet with this group. It's a team that I think has a lot to improve on, stuff that they probably feel like they could do better on both sides of the ball, but specifically on offense. And it's a Southern Illinois team that, you know, the Salukis is a dog right now. This is a wounded dog. I mean, you don't probably go to Grand Forks expecting to give up 44.
Well, no. And I, you know, I didn't get a chance to watch any of the game. I haven't seen any of the highlights, but you take a look at the numbers and how they played, and there's just not a lot of positives, to put it lightly. And maybe UND's better than we thought. I don't know.
Maybe.
But I don't know. I'm not too optimistic about SIU in terms of being a formidable foe, if I said that correctly. Because I'm scrolling down here right now. How many turnovers? Did they end up with 5 turnovers? Is that what the final number was?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still scrolling through trying to find it.
Two picks and 3 fumbles lost, I think. I know one of which was returned for a touchdown directly, and then 2 of which I think were obviously phenomenal field position setups. But this game, you know, this was a bigger ass kicking than it even looks like. We're talking about a touchdown at the top of the fourth quarter a touchdown at the bottom of the third quarter to go up 44-14, and the touchdown late from Javon Williams Jr., making it look like more of a shootout at 44-21. That's still a butt kicking, but I mean, this thing was biblical. This was a whooping, and this is a team. Now, of course, Jeremy Chinn is now the runner up rookie of the year for Trevor Gebhardt's Carolina Panthers.
Well, Panthers.
He's not walking through that door anymore, but I don't think that means you are going to want to give up 6 yards of carry to UND and make, you know, true freshman Tommy Schuster just have to throw it 23 times, complete 100 yards of passes and throw 3 touchdowns. I mean, I get it. And Bubba is something crazy, like 44-25 at home, or like a significantly better home record than his overall record. He gets it done in the Alaris Center. But this is still a game where SIU's in the top 25 in the country. They make the run. They bring back Javon Williams Jr., a guy that, you know, they put in the Wildcat and even gave NDSU some fits last year.
Right.
And you would just hope that With Landon Lenore and Avante Cox coming back on offense, you're a version of what you were last year. And yes, Jeremy Chin's not walking through that door, but man, the whole program can't be based on one safety. I don't think. A rough look for those guys, really top to bottom. And the number that sticks out to me, Trev, is the 5.9 in carry, because UND does not have the backs or the offensive line that the Bison do.
Right. That spells trouble. And ball security is job security. So, and you take a look at, SIU's offense, and Javon Williams does play a factor in that, but they were 7-15 on third down, 2-for-2 on fourth. So their conversion rate on the back half of series was very high, and their red zone scores were 3-for-3. So there's something that they can work with, but if you're giving up 6 yards of carry to UND, they clearly don't have the O-line that the Bison do. And you turn the ball over 5 times, you mimic that performance against the Bison, even if it is at home, you're in for another 30-point blowout.
Yeah, and that's the number of all the numbers that freak me out, is that yards per carry, because I do compare Kobe Johnson and even Dom Gannella to the talent level that's at UND right now. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the kid, but their leading rusher, Otis Weah, is literally from Moorhead and was not basically offered a scholarship to come to NDSU. I mean, that he was not deemed, you know, good enough to come to North Dakota State, and he led UND in rushing as, I think, a redshirt freshman or yet a redshirt sophomore. And then you look at the talent level at North Dakota State at the tailback position, and you look at the talent at North Dakota State up front, they're going to be able to move people. And it brings up an interesting point, too, with Jasir Cox, et cetera, and Matt Ants talking. You know, he does not want to lead the nation in pass breakups. These guys would like to force some turnovers, and they have to be just salivating. If there was an emphasis on punching the ball out, if there was an emphasis on catching interceptions, if there was an emphasis this week on actually turning the other team over, you got a freshman quarterback you've got a young defense at UND that lost both linebackers off of last year's team, lost, you know, multiple high-end defensive backs. Jordan Kennedy, really the only one who's big time that came back, and you still turn the ball over 5 times. I think Michael Tutsi and Jasir Cox and James Kaiser and Josh Hayes have to be just salivating over being able to finally get their hands on the football.
So you bring up some good points there, and as I'm looking at it, when you're talking about it, and do you know, first of all, who started at quarterback last week for SIU? I also noticed that they have Javon Williams listed as a backup at running back. Do you have any insight into that, Ross?
Yeah, I think Nick Baker was the starter and then got pulled after his third or fourth turnover, because he had 2 picks, and he had a couple of fumbles lost as well. And Javon Williams Jr. is the wildcat quarterback. That is the purpose that he serves. So there are some snaps where they snap it directly to him, and then I think he is listed on the depth chart as somebody that they might also, do some tailback stuff with, or do some dual quarterback stuff with, like, I don't know, like kind of like Wentz and Hurts last year, or we've seen some dual quarterback formations. But that is what Javon Williams Jr. does. Is wildcat quarterback extraordinaire.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember watching that game last year. He gave us some fits. So naturally, you just assume he's just going to be the starting running back. You see a guy like that listed at backup, you're going, okay, what kind of horses are in that stable?
Yeah.
So, okay, that's interesting to know. I do know that they made a quarterback switch, but wasn't aware of who started, who didn't.
Yeah.
But it looks like they're giving the nod to the senior now. So,
you want to talk, Trevor, about another red flag. Let's talk about their ability to run against, again, like I said, a pretty young UND defense. Not that North Dakota State's defense isn't young, but they were dominant up front. They were very, very good up front. This SIU offense averaged 2.6 yards a carry with a 29-yard rush by a wide receiver. So that should concern the hell out of you. If you take out the 29-yard rush by the wide receiver, where do you get in a yards per carry perspective? That's why I think this is a massive mismatch with the ability of Code Green to use 9 or 10 different defensive linemen and keep those fast linebackers free. You're going to be in third and long all freaking day.
Hey, Spencer Wagey, if you're listening, my fellow South Dakota brother, have fun, my man, because you should have a highlight tape at the end of this game. An absolute highlight tape.
They couldn't get anything blocked. North Dakota State's game. I think the number one, I mean, I don't think I know because I read the comments. I read the stuff we post on Facebook for people to read. I get the tweets. Guys, I get it all. There is Zeb consternation among Bison Nation. There is concern. Pro Football Focus College, we did a little inside the numbers. He was actually North Dakota State's lowest graded Bison on offense. I made the point to point out that, first of all, their grades aren't the gospel. And second of all, there were 5 Youngstown State starters that had a lower grade for that game than Zeb did. But they did not love his work. First start in a college game since 2018. So where do you fall in between there should be a little concern and guys chill out?
It's a mix of both. I mean, there's certainly things that you look at that make people raise an eyebrow, but you've got to understand the standard of excellence that you've seen since 2010 with Brock Jensen. Yeah. And we've been very spoiled as Bison, myself as a player and as a fan and as an analyst. And so when you have that you're used to a certain standard, and then it drops off to a noticeable margin, albeit it's one game, it's human nature to panic. But again, to your point, it's his first start in 3 years. You've had a lot of weird changes. Who knows what the prep work has looked like? I don't know how their meetings are. I don't know if they're having in-person meetings, Zoom meetings. That'd be a question for Grant.
So missing Zach Mathis, missing Phoenix Sproles.
Exactly. There were 2 drops within that early. Somebody slipped. Somebody slipped. I think there was actually another slip. So
Christian
he had
slipped.
Yeah. So he had 2 incompletions early that could have very well changed the tone. So if he hits a home run with Christian right away early in the game, okay, that builds confidence. He gets in a rhythm and he feels pretty good about it. Whereas those 2 things change can change the whole dynamic of his psyche. So I'm not overly concerned. It's one game. It's going to take 2 to 3 games total to really get a good feel for it. So the jury's still out. Don't come after the kid. Let him live. Let him play some ball. And there were things that I did like that his ball, it doesn't zip like 11s did or even 5, but it's no squandering duck like Peyton Manning in the back end of his career in Denver, if you know what I'm saying. Right. You know, so he's got tools to work with. I'm not overly concerned. He does need to improve. Don't get me wrong. I'm looking at him and as far as, okay, where does Zeb's quality of play need to be if we feel comfortable about winning the national title tomorrow? Clearly that's, you know, the far-fetched goal, but you go, okay, I can see where and why he needs to. He's not there yet, but you don't want him to peak in game 1 either. So let the kid progress, let him live, and he's aware of it. So the coaches will do a great job. I feel fully confident in that. You have the QB guru.
Randy.
North Dakota's finest and Randy Hedberg. Yep. So things will be all right. We'll see how it progresses in week 2, and that's all you want to see. You want to see the most progression from week 1 to week 2. So don't never read too much into week 1 is what I'm trying to get at.
He can spin it, man. That's the vernacular I always use. He can spin it. I really like I thought his finest play was a 3rd down. They went empty, went through his first progression, wasn't there to Gindorf, went all the way back to the other side of the field and zipped one outside shoulder to Lippy, where if it was inside shoulder, it was a pick 6.
Yes.
But it was outside shoulder. It was perfect ball placement, good arm strength, and it showed you kind of his talents, his abilities. I'm with you. I mean, honestly, like midway through game 4, if it's still like this, then I'm concerned. I just,
yeah,
the kid has not started a football game in 874 days. Now probably 876 or whenever I came up with that number. It was Iowa State TCU 2019. He's backing up Trey. And then obviously fall 2020, he backs up Trey for one game. And now here we are in 2021. Guys, that's a lot of time. I mean, that's a lot of time to start between games.
So the one thing I forgot to touch on, and I did think of this during the game, was you can see the wheel spinning in his head as he's going through a progression and making decisions with the read. He's a very intelligent football player. And it was a quick seam route. I think it was an attached set in the red zone. And I believe it was a third down and to a tight end. But he placed the ball, and I think it was Babich. He placed the ball high enough to where he was going to be the only guy to get it. And if he didn't, it was an incomplete. So he's lived
that another day. Babich got hooked.
Yes, exactly. They could have called the PI. I don't believe they did, but he had that one, and then there was a throw early on, and I tweeted something at Dom because he tweeted about the play, and it was somebody running somebody over. They were on the same page, and that's what I wanted to see.
Gindy.
Yep.
Gindy stopped and found the hole in the zone and then hammered somebody.
And Zeb kind of threw across his body in a way too, but those two were on the same page, and you could see it. He knew right when he was going to settle in the zone, and they knew they were going to get 6 yards out of it. Tremendous. And then he ended up getting some yak out of there, bulldozed somebody over, and made a quick highlight tape out of it. But things like that are very encouraging to where you can tell you have an intelligent football player taking snaps and making smart decisions to where he knows he's going to put his team in the best position possible.
Yeah, for sure. And that's another thing too. I thought, I went through the numbers on PFF College, zero turnover worthy plays in 20 dropbacks. He did not. And what that means for PFF is if the guy drops an interception or you fumble and your guy picks it up, it's still a turnover worthy play. It just takes the luck out of the stat keeping. And Zeb had zero turnover worthy plays on Sunday, which is exactly what you want to have when the defense is playing at that level. But you're right. I mean, this fan base, my God, they have it better off than the Gophers, than Ohio State, than
basically
anybody that isn't Oklahoma's transfer train. They have it better than Texas A&M. They got it better than Oregon, certainly. Stanford. I mean, I could go on and on about these high level programs, folks. The least gifted from a post NDSU standpoint player of the last decade plus was Brock Jensen, who is one of the winningest quarterbacks in the history of college football and was good enough to have some time with the Dolphins and have a CFL career. And he's the least gifted of these guys. You're talking about the number two overall pick, a fifth round pick, and then soon to be another top 10 pick. The standard at quarterback, I weep for those of you that did not have to live through the days of Jose Moeller. I weep for you.
He is, by the way, who's one of the funniest individuals ever.
And he's doing a great job. He's got, I think he's training kids now. I mean, he's living his best life in post game, but winning games, man, they wouldn't have survived beating Kansas 9-3. I don't think so. Or 6-3, whatever in God's name it was.
Six to three. That was my redshirt year. That was our first game. I remember making that trip. Well,
that's amazing.
Quite crazy times. A lot has changed since then.
All right, Trev, let's wrap this baby up. I think you and I are of a very similar mind headed into this game. Give me a score prediction.
I think Tyler Roll and the offense are going to roll. So I've got 49-17.
Yeah, I've got 35-10. I'm with you there. I think there's still some kinks to get kind of ironed out, but I think this is a low number of possession game. I don't think either team is going to get to like 65 or 70 plays. I don't see that happening. I see Coach Roll putting the Salukis in the grinder. I think he watches this UND tape and goes, oh my God, we're going to put these guys in the turf. I think Zeb has like a very efficient 10 for 13 day. It's like seriously, something in that neck of the woods.
60 yard bombs in there to number one.
Exactly. So
yeah,
Trev and I seeing a big, big Bison win. Folks, thank you so much for listening to this show all the way through. Hopefully you are ready for a huge North Dakota State Athletics weekend. Everybody stay safe and go Bison.